Believe it or not, one in every three mouthfuls of food you eat is a direct result of pollination. And it's only one in every three because of the cereals you eat, grasses that are mainly wind pollinated. And imagine if we lose 90% of that through the varroa mite coming in and attacking the honeybee hives. So until a problem comes along, we just seem to accept the kind of status quo and everything's going fine in that. And also there's the phrase that something you don't pay for, you don't really appreciate. And we're getting this $5 billion worth of free pollination done. When we're not getting that, then we're going to see problems.
The priceless work of bees. And I saw this week that we've lost about 300 billion bees globally since the colony collapse began a few years ago. Ken Walker is curator of entomology at Museum Victoria, and he's showing Matt Smith his immense collection of large and small bees.
Welcome to my bee area. All these drawers from there down to the end are all full of bees.
All right, somebody's got a pet project.
Yeah, you tend to find in museums that the collections reflect the previous research interests of the previous curators and that. So a bit of an overkill, so to speak. But look, you know, here I've got material from South Africa, from Madagascar, from a whole range of places. As I said, it's important to be able to put the Australian fauna in relationship to a number of the overseas ones. And obviously, the southern Gondwana link, Africa, South America, Australia, is very important to get that. So I've travelled to all of these countries and I have collected extensively. And now we're able to place the Australian fauna quite nicely in the southern hemisphere with relationships where they're going to go and that. So I'll show you here the smallest bee in the world is indeed these.
I can hardly see that.
Yeah, there's a one species, Leuconatha, which the females are 2.1 millimetres in body length. And they are a bee that occurs up in Cape York Peninsula.
Wow.
We have a very large bee here from Western Australia called Dawson's bee, but it's not the largest bee in the world. Bees are broken up into what we call short tongue or long tongue bees. This is purely how long the glossal or the tongue is in that. Now, the bulk of the native Australian bees are all short tongue bees, and we believe this is because they co-evolved with the most primitive plant family in the world, the Myrtaceae, which are mainly your eucalypts, gum trees, your tristanias and that type of thing. The Myrtaceae present their nectar in a broad, shallow cup. A short-tongued bee can simply sit on the side of the cup and lap the nectar up. It doesn't have to go down to a long corolla or a deep tube flower, which you can't do in that. So consequently, when the first settlers came out and began bringing all their exotic plants from England, apples and, you know, pears and things like that, the native Australian bee said, I can't touch that.
Yeah.
Can't go near it all. And so in 1822, they sailed out the first hive of honeybees to Australia. Now, most people think of the honeybee as being the Australian native bee.
Yeah.
And it's quite wrong. In fact, we have almost 2,000 species of native Australian bees. And the one that does most of the pollination in Australia is indeed the honeybee. Now, we get about $5 billion worth of free pollination done by the native bees and by the honeybee in Australia. And we're very fortunate. I don't know if you're aware or have heard of the colony collapse disorder in America and Europe. That's where whole colonies of bees are just dying. We're the last continent that doesn't have what's called the varroa mite. There's a mite that gets onto the bee and weakens them. If we do get that, indeed, in some cases overseas, they've seen a 90% drop in pollination when they have colony collapse disorder. So imagine if Australia, with $5 billion worth of free pollination, suddenly gets attacked by varroa mite and we lose 90% of that. Our crops are going to fail. You'll be paying an extraordinary amount of money for apples, for pears, for watermelons, for anything like that that needs pollination. It's a big concern. We're surrounded by water, which is a fantastic quarantine, but we have millions of visitors coming every year and boats and everything like that. So we think that the mite will finally come here, but we're doing everything we possibly can to keep it out.
What measures are in place now then?
Around Australia, there are about 160 what they call sentinel hives. So around every port in Australia, there are honeybee hives that are put there and checked every 2 weeks, because the exotic bee will come in with the mites on it and they'll go to flowers and the mites will transfer from the bees that have come from overseas to the honeybees that are here in Australia. And then they will go back to their colony, back to their hives, and then the varroa mite will grow and develop there. So these sentinel hives are basically our way of looking out for when it occurs and where it occurs. And then as soon as we find that, there are miticides that have been developed overseas to help this. We'll just hit everything in that surrounding area with miticides and try and wipe the thing out.
It's like a trigger colony kind of thing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. By having them managed by beekeepers, they can see slight variations in the temperament or the vigour. But the big concern.
So how are the native bees going with competition from outside honeybees?
There's been extensive surveying done of the competition between the honeybee and the native bee, and to date we have found no deleterious competition effects between it. Mainly because, as you're seeing, the size of the native bees are very small. The native bees don't form a colony, so they don't need these massive amounts of pollen and nectar to be able to survive. This little bee here will simply go along, dig a hole in the side of the tree or dig a hole in the ground, make a little pollen pudding, put an egg on it and go away in that. So there's an enormous amount of eucalypt out there that provides them with all this work. There are deleterious problems with the vertebrates. Two cases in particular. One, feral hives. This is where a honeybee hive swarms and it goes off into the bush by itself. They typically nest in tree hollows, and that's where parrots and lizards nest. And so the vertebrates, both lizards and birds, are losing their nesting sites. The other problem, of course, is that certain birds like honey eaters and those, they have a defined area in which they feed to be able to get the nectar in that. You bring 60 or 100 hives into that area, it's going to deplete the honey in that area. It won't deplete it sufficiently to cause any problems to the native bees, but the birds feeding in the area will have to increase the area in which they feed, which of course will encroach upon another bird's area that it's feeding in that.
Should we be complacent and confident about the current state of the native bee?
During my 33 years of collecting, the major times that I see decline in native bee numbers is around droughts. So they're natural events, and the population waxes and wanes with natural events. None of us who collect bees have seen any decline in the number of species or in the biodiversity that occurs in an area. So at the moment, the status quo seems to be being held very nicely.
So far, so good, but eternal vigilance is required. Ken Walker at Museum Victoria with Matt Smith.